Can I give one example?
Yeah, sure. Make it brief, please. There's a lot of callers. Please, make it brief.
All right. Having read interviews with Mrs. Murray, I know she's received bushels of letters threatening her life and calling her about every name you could think of, and all of these from so-called Christians. But
that's not the point you said you were going to make. You said you were going to give us an example of the church being lethargic in various social causes. Please
all right.
Give us the example.
When we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, what percentage of the church in this country spoke out against it?
Yes, I think that you have a point when you say the churches haven't been as forthright as they should be in dealing with social issues. But this is not because they are religious. It's because they're not sufficiently religious.
No, I didn't say it was, but I just said it seems to me the religious establishment is trying to pass itself off as the great beacon of morality, where in reality it is really something that suppresses individualism. It seems to in league with the status quo. It doesn't seem to come out actively enough and participate to the full extent it should in the moral duties it's supposed to accept in being religious.
Well, you're quite right that the church ought to be doing more than it is. But it's one of the few organized bodies that are making a really forthright attempt to get at this problem of
writers?
Social injustice in our time.
What about writers? I think they've done a lot more.
Well, I'm not going to run down other
writers that have done a lot, too. I think Dr. Montgomery has answered your question, and I thank you very much for the call tonight.
Could you please give me an example, sir, of what your church has done to stop the war in Vietnam?
Well, the question
or
of whether the war in Vietnam is moral or not is the first question.
Do you think it is, and does your church think that it is?
Well, I spent 2 days at the 7th Annual Conference on Christian Ethics in Evanston 7 months ago, and the first day was spent listening to testimony and factual information on the war that would help us to reach some kind of moral judgment on it. And this is not an easy situation. It isn't simply a matter of saying out of hand that the war in Vietnam is immoral.
Well, then you are informed on it, and from this information, what do you think about the war in Vietnam? I mean,
I'll be perfectly honest about this. I think that it's such a confused situation in terms of the facts that it's extremely difficult to make any kind of moral judgment. We don't know who the aggressor is in the situation, and not knowing that, it's very difficult to make any statement as to whether it's a just war or not.
Okay, let's continue with the call.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, I'd like to ask Ms. O'Hare why hospitals are exempted from our tax program. There's a lot of people who don't believe in hospitals. They don't believe in medical research. They don't believe in anything. Why should they pay taxes for something that they don't believe? Why should it be that she can pick and choose what she wants to tax and what she can't tax? They should release educational institutions. There's an outfit in Iowa that doesn't believe in educating children. Why should they support higher education?
Well, I think you have an axe to grind, but you and Mrs. Murray are at a different grindstone, really. You know, if you're against the police department, should we abolish police departments, too, or fire departments?
No, but why should the Christian Scientists do not believe in hospitals and that? Why should they get a tax break? Why shouldn't the people who believe in it pay for it? That's her theory, that the people who believe in churches should pay for the churches. If people don't believe in hospitals, why should they?
Wait a minute. Let's suppose I start a religion that believes in abolishing fire departments. Why should I pay for a fire department if it's against my religious belief?
Well, that's
it's a pretty absurd argument, isn't it? It's a pretty stupid argument, I think. And I think yours does not hold a great deal more water. Abolishing hospitals because a particular religious minority disagrees with hospitals.
Yeah. I didn't say abolishing hospitals. I said abolishing the tax, a free tax ride for them.
Oh,
I don't want
that in effect
hospitals.
Might do the same.
Don't
well, that might
wrong.
Do the same
I just
thing.
That if you want to have a hospital, that's fine, but you pay for it.
You know, Senator Patman, Representative Patman of Texas, is looking into the problem of all kind of tax-free foundations. And he is finding that there are many, many tax-free foundations which should be have a second look all the way around. Many of them that are supposed to be educational or health are only to perpetuate vast personal fortunes. Many of them are to push particular doctrinaire or dogmatic concepts that have nothing to do really with the so-called democracy or democratic system that we are trying to effectuate here in the United States. And all of these, I think many of the unions, for instance, have very vast pools of wealth having to do with tax foundations. And I think that this is a problem that just generally needs to be looked into, and that Representative Patman of the United States Congress is doing a very good job on this, and that later on these will all be examined.
Your stand. Why do you exempt hospitals from taxation, from real estate taxes?
I don't. I am asking that anything that the churches own,
well,
no matter what
about
it is,
church hospitals. We're talking about hospitals in general.
I'm talking about Cook County Hospital.
All right.
Why should I pay when it's against, it isn't against my religion, but I know people who it's against their religion. Why should they take tax money to support something that they don't think is right?
Can I tell you why? Because in a civilized society, which I like to think ours is, or semi-civilized, there are certain institutions, schools, fire departments, police departments, and hospitals, those are pretty basic, with which a civilized society cannot function without these.
Well, if you don't have...
cannot function without these.
You don't have a civilized society either.
What?
If you abolish the churches, you're not going to have a very civilized society either.
Well, that's a moot question.
Well, exactly. Okay,
well,
they're all
moot
questions.
What you say is you want to pick and choose your pet thing and then let it go. I say if you want to do it, then let everybody pay for everything that they want.
Okay.
Which I think is chaos.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Hello, you're on the air.
Well, I should like to address my remarks to Mrs. O'Hare to revert to what she was saying about no proof of any such man, Jesus Christ, having lived. If you do... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you do not believe that anyone named Jesus Christ lived, then surely you must concede that somebody injected an entirely new idea in religion, that of love, over and above dog-eat-dog sort of thing. And does it matter then what name he's called by? Somebody did it at that time, and it shook the world. And another thing, another part to this is that I think you are vilifying the church because it's filled with human beings who are naturally full of error and they're not doing things. But if they were to, and they are endeavoring toward that end, to really follow this person, call him Jesus Christ or anyone else you wish, then we would revolutionize the world.
You see love in your church. I don't. You see...
Maybe that's because you're not in her church.
Well, that's true. I think always that those persons outside of an institution can perhaps take a better objective view of it. I think, for instance, the Jews in America are able to look at our culture and to analyze it better than white upper middle class Protestant. I think the Catholics, perhaps in America, can view our culture and take a better look at it because for a long time they have been outside of it.
Yeah, on the other hand, as a historian, I find that I've got to enter into the spirit of what I read in the past in order to understand it fully. This isn't just a matter of standing outside and copying down the facts. It's a matter of finding the facts and then entering into the situation so that I can appreciate what's going on. And you talk about the religion as a Neanderthal would talk about television. You simply had no contact personally with it, and therefore you're talking completely out of your depth.
Well, I'm glad that you know my life history. Of course, I was a member of the church for many, many years.
Were you a Christian?
Yeah, yes. You didn't think I was a Jew.
Ah, that shows that you consider Christian to be equivalent to being a member of a church. A Christian is a person who has given his life to Jesus Christ.
I've never met anybody like that.
The center and circumference of the person's life.
I have never met a Christian in America,
that's,
and I don't think
and
I
that's
ever will.
My whole point. You haven't had contact with people who do manifest the love of Christ, and so apparently you're unable to say anything about them.
Well, you see, you have been preaching and practicing so-called Christianity for 1,600 years, and at the end of this time, there is such a paucity of it that I am unable, in all of my searches, and as I go like Diogenes with his feeble candle, to find a practicing Christian. And I think that if I was, I would be opposed
if you came across him. The minute that you come across anybody who manifests love and so forth, you attribute this to something else. This is just like the man who thought he was dead.
Well, okay,
let's continue.
Hello, this is James Heyman, and I voice the sentiment and also the expression of my wife, Olinda Bryant Heyman. When I say to Mrs. Maitland Murray O'Hara...
Wait a minute, I didn't understand who you were expressing.
I identified him.
I'm expressing the sentiments of my wife.
Yep.
Olinda Bryant, and also this is James Heyman.
Yeah.
I'd like to voice the sentiment of both of us when I say to Miss O'Hara,
that you are a most courageous and outstanding woman. And if Dr., what's his name?
Dr. Montgomery.
If Dr. Montgomery would spend as much time trying to implement the processes of integrating the churches as he did of trying to find an excuse out of it, out of Mrs. O'Hara's questions, he would be a most wonderful man. But now I have one question for Dr. Montgomery, and that is, he was talking about the war in Vietnam a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
He mentioned the term, a just war. Have we become at least so civilized that we now have what is known as just wars, Dr. Montgomery?
In the kind of human situation in which you find yourself and I find myself, it's not possible always to make decisions that result in total good and zero evil. It's generally necessary to make decisions in terms of the lesser of evil.
Let Dr. Montgomery finish, please.
Okay.
Nobody is saying that any war is just in any absolute sense, but it may well be that in a given situation, it's the lesser of evils. And that was the way in which I was using the expression.
Well, Dr. Montgomery, I think that you are very articulate, and I must congratulate you on this point. But now, when we read in the paper that 500 Vietnamese were killed, or that we bombed accidentally a school or a community, we read these figures. The American people, in a sense, are so apathetic and so complacent until when they read a figure of 500 being killed in Vietnam, of a Negro being bombed out of a church somewhere in Mississippi, Alabama, or even here in Chicago looking for a job after we had the case a few months ago, this Negro...
Now you're rambling.
No, you're rambling.
Let's stick to the point. Now
I'm trying to get a point to you.
Well, get to the point to Dr. Montgomery, please.
When we read a figure of somebody being killed, we are so accustomed, I should say, by the apathy of the churches, and I must come back to the churches, that this is only a number to us. And what are the Christian leaders? May I quote to you one thing, please?
Please be brief, if you will.
I would like to quote to you a statement from Dr. Washington, who is the chaplain of religion at Dixon College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And he says, there is no such thing as a white Christianity, but there is a white control of the historical sources. Now, the Negroes have been kept from full responsibility.
Well, wait a minute.
Wait.
You began this conversation.
Negroes have been drawn...
I'm sorry. It doesn't make any point to argue. He began the conversation about rambling about the Vietnam War, and he's rambling on much too far.
Could I make just one point on
that? Listening. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think that that he's quite right that we are often indifferent to the sufferings that we read about, and this is a tragedy. And I want to go on record as opposing the kind of persecution of minority groups or of people in situations such as Vietnam. Those situations, at best, are lesser of evils, and we shouldn't try and justify them in any absolute sense at all.
Okay, fine. Thank you for the call tonight. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. I would like to direct my remarks to Madeline Murray. I lived over in Honolulu while she was over there with her family, and I had the occasion to talk to her son in a group for about a half an hour one day. Now, she said that at the age of 14, that he came home and objected to reciting the Lord's Prayer in school. And I question this very, very highly. I think that her suit for abolishing prayer in school, I have never in my lifetime, and I was probably out of school 40 years before he ever got in, I never was asked to recite the Lord's Prayer. And the Pledge of Allegiance was one nation under God.
That's recent, by the way.
But it's very, very recent.
1954.
Yeah. June 30th, 1954.
But I would suggest to Madeline Murray that after being in her son's company, I would say today he would be about 22, give
He's
or take.
He's going to be 21 years old on May the 23rd.
Yeah, what's your point, please?
Give or take. Well, I don't think he ever had an original idea in his life.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are you attacking Mrs. Murray, her son, the church?
No, but it was his idea for her to start the suit, and it was filed in his name.
All right. Now, you may have a long record of associating with 14-year-old boys who don't have any ideas. My son happened to have this idea, and I will not accept your attacking the inception of this suit. This is how it happened. If you don't like it, that's
Let me ask you a question.
That's how it
happened. Let me ask you a question. Did you or did you not state publicly on many occasions that as a young girl that you read and that your family were church-going Christians, but you read and you decided that you were going to become an atheist? Is this true?
I read this at what I felt was my intellectual age of discretion when I was 12, 13, and 14 years old, about that time. And there are persons in America who can come to the age of intellectual discretion at this particular time, and who from then on begin to question, who begin to look, who begin to build up their ideas. I'm sure you did, too.
Well, some people, of course. Hello.
What is... I forgot your name.
That's my name. Yeah, go ahead.
Freudian slip, actually.
Some people.
I think there are many, many people like this who start out at this age, and so what? If you didn't have this experience, you didn't have it. I can't remedy this for you.
Well, the question, of course, is not when a person comes to a particular position, but whether the position he comes to is right or not.
No, he's questioning if my son could have this, or if my son had the ability to think at this time. I'm not sure what his point is, really. I'm not sure what his point is, really. The impression that your son never made a decision on his own except to go to the bathroom. Well, wait a minute. Now, let's not start that baloney. Now, I don't know what your point is. Are you angry at the church, the Supreme Court ruling? Are you angry at his son? Now, if you want to insult Madeline Murray, let's not take up a whole night of name-calling, okay? Thank you very much for the call. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, this is Bob Troy calling.
Hi, Bob.
And I find it very interesting that Dr. Montgomery talks as if the Christian religion was the only true religion. I wonder if he stopped to consider such great religions as Buddhism or Shintoism or Mohammedanism. Why is Christianity more historically valid as an absolute for my life than not these?
Yes. If you check into Buddhism, Buddhism, Shinto, and so forth... I guess we're all getting tired. If you check into these, you'll discover that they don't make historical claims in the sense of basing the truth of their affirmations on historical events. They present their religious truth as something which you experience and you find it to be true in some inner sense. Now, Christianity recognizes is recognized in general, that inner experience is not in itself a determinative of truth. One needs to have some kind of external check to make sure that one's own experience, religiously or otherwise, isn't just a projection of oneself. Christianity bases its claims on the historical existence of Jesus and on his claims to deity and on his resurrection from the dead. This kind of claim is not the sort of thing which simply exists within the individual believer. It's something which you can check out yourself in the documents that Mrs. Murray refuses even to face.
Dr. Montgomery, these people in these other religions seem to know God in a certain way. What way would you say that they've experienced God?
I think in the way in which the Athenians experienced the unknown God. They recognized the need for something. They approached it as best they could, but they needed something beyond this. What they needed was the forgiveness of their sins, and this Jesus Christ provided on the cross.
You know, this is very interesting that you're saying that the Christians do need an external manifestation of this that must be historical. This is extremely interesting because it seems to me then to indicate, as this man is trying to indicate, that something that comes from within you, this idea of conscience that you call it, or eternal truth, etc., cannot be self-revealing or self-regulated or self-intuitively perceived or apperceived as in the other religions. But you must have this external stance, and this is why you fight so desperately to try to prove it, which means that you do need a prop then in order to keep your religion going.
The fact that Christianity is based on history, on historical evidence, doesn't make that a prop. That's simply an interpretation that you're placing on it.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call tonight also. One point, Dr. Montgomery.
Yes, sir.
If I understood you correctly, you said that Christianity, or your particular religion, is more valid because of its historical roots and perspective. Am I right?
Yes, in the sense that it's not possible to justify any religious claim which is based solely on personal experience.
Okay. Buddhism, it seems to me, has some historical roots. No?
Well, of course, every religion has historical origins, but not all religions, indeed only the Christian religion, finds itself basing its truth claims upon what happens in history. Any Buddhist will express indifference to the historical questions concerning Buddha. That doesn't establish Buddhism. What establishes Buddhism is the Eightfold Path. And if you want to try this, then the Buddhist claims that this will provide an inner attestation.
Let me hear what you do with Mohammed now.
Yes. In the case of Mohammedanism, Mohammed claimed to be a prophet from God. And he presented in the Quran the revelations which he claimed came from God. But the validity of that revelation doesn't rest upon historical considerations. That is to say, the Quran and its law, its eternal law, manifests itself in the experience of the individual.
This isn't in any way analogous to Moses coming forth with the Decalogue at all, or do you see this as analogous to Smith?
Joseph Smith, you
Joseph
mean?
Smith, bringing forth his leaves of gold.
Yes, these
were not historical.
Yes.
You can wipe them out by saying
that. We're not wiping them out historically. We're saying that it isn't the historical event that establishes the truth of the particular claim. For example,
Smith said he got these from this spirit, this Indian spirit who actually handed them to
him. Well, actually, it was the angel Moroni.
Well,
yeah,
who was of Indian descent.
Yeah.
All right, and right down the line, each one of these persons were saying that this was handed. Moses said God wrote it with his finger.
Let me give you a little historical example that may help this along.
Something needs to help it along.
I mean to help your understanding of it, not to help the Christian faith. At the time of the French Revolution, Chateaubriand had to put up with a fellow in the directorate who was trying to establish a new religion. This was called something like theanthropy, and he presented a long paper on the subject, and he got the ovation of several people present. When Chateaubriand was asked his opinion on this, he said, it seems to me that Jesus, in behalf of his claims, died and rose again. It seems to me that's the least you could have done. Now, that's the point.
A great line, really.
It's a beautiful line,
except, of course, we get back to the whole point that you don't have this historical validity that you claim that you have.
All right, let's continue, if we may, with our calls and comments. Hello.
Yes.
You're on the air. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you. Don?
Yeah.
We enjoy your show very much. I have a couple of questions for Mrs. Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Murray?
I'm here.
Thank you.
More or less.
Just one question in the... I'm just curious, does this mean that you cannot act as a lady or reply as a lady?
This, again, is your definition of a lady or not as a lady. I am certain that you're going to posit something on this and go ahead.
No, this was just one question. I have another question regarding, is the Russian state as it exists presently an atheistic state?
I think that they presume that they are an atheistic state.
No, I'm asking your opinion.
Do you mean, is atheism in the constitution of Russia, and is this a part of their fundamental system? I don't know. I don't know whether they set this apart and whether they are, in fact, just sponsors of atheism, or whether this is an actual part. Do you know?
Well,
I don't think
it's the Soviet Constitution. I've read the Soviet Constitution. It's a remarkable little thing. But I don't recollect whether or not... I know atheism is not part of the Constitution. By the same token, I don't know whether it's a part of the government.
I don't know whether it's a part of anything.
There's no doubt, of course, that Marx and Engels, in setting forth their particular political philosophy, grounded it firmly in atheism.
No, in materialism. There's a difference.
Oh, I'm afraid that not only in materialism, but also in atheism. Now, we've got the writings of Marx and Engels to back this up.
Well, I call myself a materialist. I'm not throwing stones at them for founding this on materialism. I'm saying that they did not say atheism per se, or that they did not expound in relation to this.
Fellow had a point he wanted to make, so I think we found him out there.
Well, that's better. Mrs. Murray, then I would like to ask, certainly in Russia in the past number of years since communism has existed, do we accept the premise that perhaps they have at least an atheistic outlook?
Yes, Germany had a Christian outlook, and Germany has committed the most horrible crimes
I want to get into this.
So,
in order for Germany to support National Socialism, it was necessary for them to create a special movement called the Deutsche Christen Movement, which, first of all, chopped out the Old Testament and then removed the Jewish references in the New Testament so as to provide a special Bible in support of their own views. Now, this shows something very significant, and it is that you cannot, on the basis of the scriptures of the Old Testament and the New Testament, support the kind of totalitarianism that was present in the Third Reich. And for Murray to go to make that kind of naive statement about the Third Reich just shows the kind of generalization that's
prone to. There have been a significant number of books in relation to the Catholic support of the Nazi period in the neo-Nazi effort. And the fact that, as a matter of fact, Hitler would have been bereft without the aid, significant aid of the Catholic Church in his very beginnings.
By Hockius, the deputy, what have you read on the subject?
Excuse me a minute.
There are a number of them. And again, I would be glad to send you
over there, please. The caller has another comment to make. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Don, or Mrs. Murray, I accept what you said. I mean, you've repeated that several times over the year now about Nazi Germany. My question is simply this. Assuming that Russia at least has an atheistic outlook, how can you then rationalize away the brutal murder of people over there? I mean, you would have to condemn all atheists as you have condemned all Christians.
There are certain power groups, and we get back to Lord Acton with this, too. There are certain power groups, or there are certain status groups, or there are certain establishment groups. We are right now involved in an atrocious war in Vietnam. And we are a Christian nation.
Gone over that.
Just a moment. Hitler was involved in genocide, and he was a Christian. This was a Christian nation.
Yes, I understand.
Russia is an atheist nation, and Russia, on the one hand, is providing hospital care for her people in much greater degree than we're ever providing.
I don't really think you can say that Russia is an atheist nation. Because what you're saying is that atheism is an established religion in Russia. They discourage religion, whether it's Judaism. I don't think atheism may be part and parcel of communist theory, but it's certainly not part and parcel of the communist state. It's so much lip service, I think. Okay?
Well, no, the whole idea is that you can equate to atheism everything that is ugly and brutal in human history.
But notice that that's exactly what you're doing with the church, you see. And you get all excited, your voice is rising and so forth. The minute that the same kind of ad hominem, guilt by association, is applied to you that you've been applying to the church for years.
That's exactly my point, Doctor. I mean, when you bring up the same thing regarding a nation, whether it's atheist or not, it's certainly non-religious.
Russia has not held itself out to have the particular kind of tenets of philosophical tenets as the Christian Church has at any point along the way.
How do you rationalize away what they have done then in killing thousands of people?
Well, are you really trying to say that because atheism is part of communism, this is a cause and effect relationship between that and mass murder? I think it's a little far-fetched. Really.
I think he's just setting up an analogy to show that Mrs. Murray has overextended herself in criticizing religion.
No, because you see, where religion was directly involved in the Inquisition, religion transcended the state. Where religion was involved, certainly in Massachusetts, if you read Brooke Adams' interpretation. You will see that here again, religion transcended the state. They were saying that religion was greater than the state right down the line. And this is why certain crimes can be laid to the door of
the point is, in a totalitarian state such as Russia, it's the state that's absolutely in control, and therefore
it
ought to be possible to create a similar analogy.
They don't make any excuses about it. They don't say we are killing these people for their benefit.
People don't go to the salt mines because they like salt.
No, but when Torquemada killed people or was instrumental in having them tortured, he demanded from the very victims love of the torture and acceptance of their...
Have you read George Orwell's 1984? At the very end of 1984, there's an attempt made by the totalitarian state to get the leading characters to love the state before their own destruction. That's a characteristic not of religion, but of totalitarianism, Mrs. Murray. You're confusing the issues.
But religion is totalitarianism. This is the whole point. Religion is fascism. Religion is thought control. Religion is 1984.
Religion is the name that you use for anything you don't like.
Yes, but Mrs. Murray, in Russia, then, no religion is a religion. On a basis.
Hey, you're going in circles and you don't understand the definition of religion.
Yeah, but Mrs. Murray beat you around the bush.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Tim. You know, whether you take Russia as an example of an atheistic country that has permitted mass murders, and they have committed mass murders, I think it's bad logic, really, to attribute atheism in Russia as the cause of mass murder and Protestantism or Christianity in Germany.
No, because this
well,
was
yes,
not
yes,
a
yes,
way
yes,
of
how
Christianity.
Can you, no, wait, well, no, wait a minute. Now, wait
Galileo
a minute.
Galileo was murdered.
No, that has
Galileo
nothing to do with what we're talking now.
In the name of Christianity.
You mean to say that in a totalitarian society such as they had in Nazi Germany, that the church also could be coexisting in a totalitarian state? That's impossible. Impossible. You really think that Hitler let the church become an influential structure within Nazi Germany?
I think that we know now that Hitler used the church at the time that the church thought that they were using Hitler. And that it came...
Well, if Hitler used the church, then of course it was Hitler's fault, wasn't it?
All right, and if the church used Hitler?
To do what?
Then that's not the church's fault. Then the church is free
to do
from
what?
Him.
Did the church create the Dachau and the Buchenwald situation?
The church actively supported Hitler in his anti-Semitism, almost right down the line. I'm sitting here struggling to think of the names of two very recent books, and I'm not relying on Hawkhus. What was it? The Nazi German and the Roman Catholic Church. I think is the name of one of these, as I said, I'll be glad to send their names to you or to anybody else who writes to me.
Okay. Let's continue. Yeah. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
I have a question to address to Mrs. O'Hare.
She's listening.
At the beginning of the program, you indicated that your group were not creedalists. You did oppose the creed of the Christian faith. Proceeded then to define for your listening audience what you meant by an atheist.
No, I haven't gone into it exactly.
The word creed itself comes from a Latin word which means I believe. And in this respect, it would appear to me that you are creedalists to a certain degree. I wish that you would comment on this. What is your differentiation between a creedalist in this respect? This would be one question. And then a second question. You indicated also at the beginning of the program, perhaps somewhat in a joking manner, that it is not so much a matter of whether God is dead, but where God is, indicating that seemingly he was in the White House. Well, after listening for the first hour and a half or so, it would seem to me almost that God must be couched in your own flesh and blood and skin, because you seemingly refuse to accept any authority other than that which agrees with you. I must say I do commend Dr. Montgomery very much for the restraint that he has shown on the program. I believe he has conducted himself very much like a gentleman, where I wish I could say the same of you as a woman. Now, since I am calling long distance, I would like your answers to those two questions. What is your differentiation between the creed as we confess it in our Christian faith and as you expressed it as an atheist, and then also, is it perhaps not true that you are in your own mind God or the final authority? Thank you very much.
I presume that it would make you very happy if I answered and said to you that I am God. So I'll be perfectly happy to say this. All right, then, Madeline Murray is God, insofar as this is involved.
Mm-hmm.
I am anti-authoritarian. I do not accept any authority at all.
Yes, other than that which would agree with you.
Will you let me finish?
Yes.
I do not accept any authority at all unless this authority can be supported by reason, by observation, by common sense, by all of those things that we can muster at this particular time in human history to support them. For instance, I mean this. If someone says to me, well, on page such and such of such and such a book, this only means that one man at one time had an opinion and he wrote a book about this particular thing, and that you are citing him.
But my opinion about the war in Vietnam is valid for me and for a great number of persons who are listening in.
Yes.
My opinion on what the place of women in society is very valid for me and for millions of women who also listen to these programs.
I
have arrived at my decisions through hard work, through college education, through personal experiences, through living, through going through all of those things which are involved from encounters in human life. And I feel that I can make my own decisions, I can back these up with my own experiences, and that I do not need to rely on any particular authority at all, at any age, at any time, and I challenge every authority down the line.
Yes.
Now, because of this, I have no creedal commitment. I can't imagine what you mean when you said, what is my creed? I couldn't identify it.
Yes.
For instance, what creed do I have? Do I have a creed that says all men shall bend their knee and supplicate a supreme being?
You defined, though, ma'am, what your belief was. You gave to Dr. Montgomery a definition of your atheistic feeling and those who would concur with you. You described this. You said this is what I believe, and this, in effect, is what a creed is, what I believe as an individual. And you have also said, I believe, if it would make you happy, that I am God. This is also a creed on your part.
There is a credo which you are going to force down my throat stemming from your idea of an historical Jesus Christ.
No,
just a moment till I finish something. In every college in the United States where one seriously studies religion, there is this department or this particular group of studies that is called Synoptics of the Bible. And
that's not the name of the group of studies. Synoptics refer to the first three Gospels.
This, you study the courses. As a matter of fact, in many colleges are called Synoptics of the Bible, and you go in and you take this for 3 hours credit or 4 hours credit or what have you. I don't know what you do in your school. This Synoptics of the Bible has been a tremendous problem. Over years, there have been continual arguments in the religious community. Now, suddenly you
over
think
what? Over
this.
What?
What was Jesus Christ's last words? How come there are two different sermons on the Mount? Why are there two different genealogies for Jesus Christ?
I think we're going a little bit off the track. A little bit off the track.
Yes, there are tremendous problems, is what I'm saying.
Yes,
you
but the presence of problems with regard to four different witnesses to Jesus don't provide any ground for an authoritarian rejection of his existence. If we have four people enter a court of law, and the four people present four testimonies, they are obviously from four different angles.
If they were contemporary with the event.
They are contemporary with the event.
Contemporary with the event.
And they are not consistent, and they are contemporary with the event. Encyclopedia Britannica dating, for example, Mark's Gospel, 64 to 70, Matthew and Luke, 80 to 85. Now, these were in circulation
because
at the time people
were alive. Encyclopedia Britannica is going to support the concept of Christianity.
Okay, well, that's a pretty strong statement, too. But
it seems to me that it gets pretty neurotic when the testimony of the
experts which you want to cite.
No, they're not my experts, Mrs. O'Hare. These are not people that I've created out of whole cloth, for goodness sake. These are people who have no axe to grind in the situation.
Oh,
for example, we have F.F. Bruce, who is not a clergyman. He is a professor at Manchester University in England and is one of the experts on the Dead Sea Scrolls. Bruce points out that these documents were in circulation when people who desperately wanted to smash the Christian faith were still alive and who had had contact with Jesus. They could easily have taken care of the claim that Jesus had risen from the dead if there hadn't been sound factual evidence in behalf of it. You can't just shove this under the rug. It shows a kind of neurotic defensiveness that you won't face
this kind of
evidence.
It is not when anyone seriously sits there and says that someone died, and after 3 days of death they arose, and rolled back a stone and then had a meeting with their disciples and descended into heaven.
Ascended into heaven.
What did I say? Descended.
Heaven,
well,
that
time.
Don't forget. That was another thing you said.
I'm sorry. I think you're out of your mind.
Well, the question as to what can or what can't happen in the universe is a question that can be determined only by investigation. Nobody
that's
can sit
right.
in an armchair and say resurrections
right,
don't
right.
happen.
Well, I don't think, Dr. Montgomery, you're going to convince Madeline Murray of...
I don't think you can convince anybody that someone can be dead 3 days and arise. I don't think
by the same token, you're not going to convince Dr. Montgomery that he's wrong either. So let's At this point, move on with your calls.
No, it's very, there's something here that's very important, and
all right.
Is this. If the religious community can convince us to be so irrational as to accept the Bible, then they can also convince us as to be so irrational as to say that there is such a thing as a just war or an unjust war, and that they cannot make a commitment about Vietnam. They can convince us to be so irrational.
Wait a minute. Let's not get hung up on Vietnam. No, Madeline, wait a minute. Let's face it. There are many religious groups that have had strong reservations about the Vietnam War. Many have condemned it. So without getting hung up in the Vietnam War.
They're church liberals who feel that they can say something inside their churches but can't move out to do anything in regard to this in the community.
All right, let's move along now. Hello, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I would like to address my comments and questions to the woman on your program. Is that
my name is Mrs. O'Hare, and I will not be addressed as the woman. You address me as I am.
Mrs. O'Hara.
O'Hare.
All right.
I think she's just nervous. She's not trying to be ungracious.
I would like to read the First Amendment to our Constitution.
No, please don't. I think we all know what the First Amendment's all about, so please go ahead.
What about the simple, innocuous prayer which started this furor in the first place?
A simple, innocuous prayer? You must be jesting.
No, I'm not. The prayer is. And this is the prayer that reached the Supreme Court. Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon thee, and we beg thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country.
I think really you're talking about the New York Regent's prayer,
yes.
Which was something a little bit different than this.
It isn't innocuous because I do not acknowledge a God, and I am not dependent on any God anywhere, and neither is millions of other atheists, neither are millions of other atheists in America.
May I continue?
Okay, go ahead.
I would like to quote the Right Reverend James A. Pike, who was an attorney before he became an Episcopalian priest. And by the way, I'm not Episcopalian.
Okay.
Bishop Pike, quoting from debate by the Founding Fathers over wording of the First Amendment, noted that what they chiefly intended to guard against was establishment of one sect in such a position as to be able to impose its views on others. Bishop Pike said those who favor the court's ruling intend to eliminate traditional practices that have grown up as America steered a middle course between a church-state union on one hand and a secularization of public life on the other. May I continue?
Well, you may be very interested to know that Bishop Pike...
Wait a minute, please. How long is this quote?
I can capitalize it very well.
Please do, okay.
The logic of the court's decision would make it unlikely that any vestige of the middle way would survive. Proponents in the court itself sincerely believe that the result would be neutrality towards religion, but godless institutions are no more neutral than godly ones, and secularism is itself a faith. The First Amendment's guarantee of the free exercise of religion protects freedom not to participate in public acknowledgments of God. Now I would like
to
ask...
Well, wait a minute. All right, go ahead.
I would like to ask six very brief questions.
Oh, no, please. No, wait a minute. We can't take the... Goodness, we have many people waiting to get on the line.
Yes,
we
but can't this take would be six. Very short.
Let's take halfway. How about three quickies, okay? Three quickies.
We'll be contingent on the others.
Well, we can't take all six, my dear. Time is of the essence, okay?
Are atheists? According to statistics, we are a nation of Christians. According to tradition, our Constitution, and what we tell the world, we are a democracy. Why, then, does not the majority rule? Do the atheists and others who have presented this question to our Supreme Court permit their children to say the Pledge of Allegiance, all of it? If they do, isn't it rather incongruous to quibble over the prayer issue? If their children remain silent when the other children say, under God, can they not remain silent during the prayer? As one reader wrote to one of the Chicago newspapers, why don't they just bow their heads and recite Humpty Dumpty to themselves? How can the saying of a prayer be charmed and
is Madeline was listening. Let's take one question. Okay, now she'd like to answer one of those questions if you will allow.
I would like to know if you would permit your child in a public school in America where a particular teacher in the morning would force your child to bow her head to the east and to acknowledge Muhammad and Allah. And that if your child did not care to do this, she should stand in reverential silence, or he should stand in reverential silence, while the children recited this accolade to Muhammad and to Allah. You would be furious about it, and you would say that this was an imposition upon you.
No, I would not.
Then tomorrow you do it.
Excuse me, let me get into this. As a Christian, you ought to be appalled if such a thing were required.
No, I'm not. For the simple reason that my child could go along with this, think his own thoughts,
and become Jews.
Maybe he's facing the east, while other children are honoring Muhammad.
Yes, I think this brings out something.
Child,
this sounds like a nifty little
God.
Classroom.
I think this brings out something very important, and it is that the believer in a religious position cannot expect the state to provide religious instruction in behalf of that position. And if you do have the kind of situation that Mrs. Murray is trying to deal with, you end up with a generalized, vague religion which doesn't mean a thing. And I'm afraid that Bishop Pike has a theology which causes him to support that kind of vague religion. In this respect, I'm with Mrs. Murray. I think that the prayers ought to go on in the churches and in church schools, that this should not be...
And in your homes, if you want to.
Yes, most certainly in your home. But let me ask you something else. There was a minister who once said words to the effect that religion should be left to the home and to the churches. I'm sure he was very sincere in this. And now
who was he, and where was he, and what page, and what year, and what's the question?
Here is the thing. He said the people should assume this, and that the families have abdicated, and all this sort of thing.
Well, now, wait a minute. You said you had a question. Would you please, in the last 30 seconds, is the question?
I have several questions, and I'm waiting for an answer.
Well, okay. Perhaps in the next few minutes, Mrs. O'Hare can answer those remaining questions, though I think she has done pretty well in answering both she and Dr. Montgomery. The main question about prayers in schools, both are in agreement on this, so I don't think there's any real point in going on. The other main point she had was that the majority of people in this country are for prayers in public schools. The majority rules in a democracy, therefore there should be prayers. This is questionable on statistical grounds alone, because I'm not so sure that a majority feels that way. So with that, let's go on and continue with. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
Hello, I should like to address my question to Mrs. O'Hare.
Go ahead, she's listening.
If she is an atheist and does not believe in God, does she believe in a supreme being? And if so, if she doesn't, how does she account for her own creation and the creation of life in general and so forth?
Okay.
I don't believe in God. I don't believe in Jesus Christ. I don't believe in Muhammad. I don't believe in Allah. I don't believe in Buddha. I don't believe... I accept none of these philosophies. I accept no idea of supreme power. I'd add nothing right along the line, up and down, insofar as religious dogma or tenets or creeds are involved.
This
is not only Christianity.
This makes me think of the of Beyond the Fringe record, where one of the Britishers came over to the States and then went back, and he said, "My, they believe in anti-communism over there. I wish we had a positive faith like that."
Well, this is my positive faith, then. Now, as to where I came from my parents having sexual relations. Yeah. As to where my parents came from, or who came first, the chicken or the egg, or whether or not our universe is or is not here, whether we imagine it or whether we experience it, I don't know. My last reading, I think that there were 11 theories as to how our particular universe came into creation. I think that these are all theories, and I think that your Bible theory is one of them. As to how the whole universe, everything that we see, came into existence, I don't know, but I think that we ought to continue our space explorations and keep our mind open. I don't think that we should say, well, we know what happened, God did it one day, and leave it go at that.
Should we keep our minds open in checking those biblical documents, yeah. Mrs. O'Hare?
Should we believe in some sort of...
She shakes her head no.
A spontaneous combustion sort of thing?
I have no idea. I have no idea at all, and I wouldn't even try to... I wouldn't even attempt to make any kind of explanation. I feel that on those things in which we are ignorant, we should express our ignorance and then try to remedy that ignorance.
And thank you very much for the call. Spontaneous combustion may be the way in which the world ends. I'm not sure, but I don't think it began that way. Let's continue now at Mo. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to direct my question to Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Go ahead.
Earlier in the program, you made a statement that the church claimed 113 million Christians out of 200 million people.
All of the churches. That not only includes Christians, but Jews and Muslims in the United States.
Yes. Well, further from that, you broke this down to where you said so many people attend church two or three days out of the year.
Three times a year. If they attend three times a year, the church claims them as a regular church goer. This is a kind of a rule of thumb.
That's right.
I don't know what church established that as a rule of thumb.
Well, one of the things that we do down in Austin is to subscribe to all of the religious magazines and to subscribe to all of the publications that come out in respect to religion and to gather up all the statistical material that the various colleges and religious groups put out. And from looking these over for, three or four years now, we find that generally this is some sort of a rule of thumb that they have, that if everybody comes to church for Easter and they come to church for Christmas and then they either come to church for New Year's or another time during the year, that they will accept that the church is for the most part in counting heads.
Oh, I see, as a statistical device.
Yes.
Yeah, I see. I thought you meant as a kind of a membership device to determine whether a person really believed or not.
Yes, in order to see how many people they can claim or not claim and how they have to direct themselves toward these unchurched.
Okay, is your question answered now?
Oh, no.
Okay, make it quick, if you will.
Outside of that, you broke it further down to where 40-some percent of the Christians... actually are Christians in this country.
They, 40% attend.
Or one quarter of the population.
One quarter of which, and this 40% who attend, the majority of these are under age 21. That's right.
Well, my question is this now. Now, you claim that the war in Vietnam, that this country is involved in, is a Christian nation. With the percentage so low, how can you justify your statement?
This is because those persons who are in command in our government repeatedly say that they are doing this from a posture of a Christian nation.
I question that, Madeline. I really do. Wait a minute. I've heard Lyndon Johnson invoke many reasons for our being in Vietnam, but the fact that we're a Christian nation, that's one he hasn't used yet, nor has Mr. Roscoe McNamara. Now, maybe you're hearing different news.
The mere fact that a politician
quotes the Bible once in a while doesn't mean that he's using Christianity as a ground for
policy.
I'm
talking about the fact that Lyndon B. Johnson and McNamara and Rusk and the Pentagon and so on go continually to the religious community for expressions of what the religious community feels in relation to this. And you have a running battle with the community, as to whether or not it's
name
a just
one occasion
or
when
support.
Dean Rusk approached any religious community to ask for its specific support.
No, stop. Was it six weeks ago, and then it was 6 weeks prior to that, and then maybe it was 2 months prior to that, that the New York Times ran a whole series, and the Washington Post, of statements of leading Christian theologians. And Judah, they always have a Jew, a Christian, and a Jew, a Protestant, and a Catholic, give statements as to whether this is a just or unjust war.
Oh, but that isn't what you were talking about. You were saying that Dean Rusk
and political leaders
are approaching the churches in order to get this kind of direct support. And
do you think that this is necessary? Do you think that it's necessary?
It's not a question of whether I consider it necessary.
Do you think that it's necessary for Lyndon B. Johnson to call up one of your ministers, or do you think that they are so self-serving in order to continue in their positions in the establishment that they gratuitously, knowing that this statement needs to be made, go ahead and make it? These people are self-serving. The establishment in the United States is, and I'm not talking in terms of a conspiracy establishment, I'm just saying that there is an establishment. We know this. There is a power structure in the United States. And this power structure, one part of it supports the other part. They give ethical reasons, considerations for this. And the leading persons in the religious community have consistently supported the administration. And
I find something very interesting in your talk about power structures and all. This sounds to me very much like the kind of talk that I've heard on occasion from extreme right-wingers about the kind of subliminal power structures that operate in relation to an international communist conspiracy. For you, it seems that it's the churches that in some strange machinations bring about peculiar effects through the government. It seems to me that this is another sign of a...
No, these are sociological studies such as the power elite, the Protestant establishment, just a tremendous number of books that have flown from the... education of community.
May I have the title and author of any one of them?
Well, wait a minute. Before we get hung up with it, let's thank the listener very much for the call. And Madeline, I began the whole show with a quote. I'd like to close it with one of your quotes. You said that religion is a crutch and only cripples need crutches. Now, Dr. Montgomery is a religious man. Would you say that he's a cripple?
Yes.
Dr. Montgomery.
Seems to me that real crippling comes when a person so cuts herself off from fact that she's unable to investigate real problems. And I think that we've had plenty of evidence on this program of that kind of thing. I'd suggest that listeners to this program not pick up something from Montgomery or from O'Hare, but that they do what Mrs. O'Hare is unwilling to do, that they go at this problem of religious truth in terms of the primary document.
Okay, I think it's a good point to jump in, and thank you both very much for being with us tonight. This is Madeline Murray O'Hare, a founder of the Society of Separationists, and of course, a militant atheist, an originator of the Supreme Court suit, and several others forthcoming. And Dr. John Montgomery, chairman of church history at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School of Deerfield, Illinois.